The other day we dropped in on a man who works on Capitol Hill. We found him by knocking on a door that said, Private. He led us through another door, into a cavernous room. It was the hearing room of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. The man has written a memoir of his decades working for lawmakers who dominate rooms like this.
My name is Bertie H. Bowman. I was born in Somerton, South Carolina. I'm the hearing coordinator for the committee.
And we are actually sitting up behind this horseshoe table.
Yeah, I'm sitting in Senator Coleman's seat right now. I'm sitting in Senator Coleman's seat for Minnesota.
And this is the hearing room where famous hearings on the Vietnam War were held.
This is the hearing room where the famous hearings were held during the Vietnam thing with John Kerry, the first lieutenant.
You mean when John Kerry came back from Vietnam and said, how do you ask a man to be the last man to die for a mistake? He's sitting at this table over here.
He's sitting at that table there.
And when senators meet these days to discuss Iraq or Iran, Bowman puts together the hearing agenda. If Richard Lugar or Barack Obama should ever need so much as a pencil, Bertie Bowman gets it. He calls his memoir Step by Step, and that's appropriate since his first job was sweeping the Capitol steps. As a young man, he fled to Washington from a South Carolina farm where his father was a sharecropper.
One day I went to McDougal's store, and all these cars, black shiny cars, and the chauffeurs all dressed neat and everything. And this man, this white man, Senator Maybach now I know, were running for re-election. That was back in 1944. I just had turned 13 years old. But when he left, his last words were, if you ever get to Washington, come by and see me. Boy, the people just clapped.
The South Carolina senator could not have known that Bertie Bowman really would come see him. The young man went on to work in a Capitol cafeteria. He drove senators' cars. He joined a small army of black employees who did anything senators asked. He got to know a lawmaker named Lyndon Johnson. He oversaw a young messenger named Bill Clinton. And he still works here, a big and gregarious man.
I'm 77. And as we say in soccer, I'm going on to 78.
He's liable to put a hand on your knee when he tells you a story. And he looks back in amazement at that white Southern senator who first gave him a job.
I didn't think that was going to happen like that, but we Southerners, we stick together.
You were too young to vote, and even if you'd been old enough to vote in 1944, odds are you weren't going to be allowed to vote.
No.
It wasn't like he was chasing a vote here.
And he just took a liking to me.
Do you think you became at some point more than just an employee, a guy doing downstairs work, as it was called, and attached to a senator?
I learned later on that every person who worked downstairs, they had a senator that they could go to. They would do things for each person. They had their man, they called it. And we just became friends.
Friends is the right word.
I would say friends, yeah. Or one Southern to another Southern helping a Southern out.
Would you say friends is the right word for other senators that you worked for around? Strom Thurmond?
Yes.
William Fulbright?
Yes.
Did there come a time when it seemed strange to you that you felt like you were a friend to, a genuine friend with, these senators who were outspoken advocates of segregation?
Definitely, they were my friends.
Did it ever seem strange to you?
No.
How do you explain it? The difference between what they said and the idea that they seem to have treated you as a human being.
They had their political agenda and I had mine. Did you see my part in there about Thurmond? You know, Thurmond said, Bertie, I thought you were going to school. I said, I fill out applications, Senator. And I turned it in at Howard University. And I said, I've been waiting a long time and he got on the phone. Robert, they speak to William Robert, administrator, please.
He called up the administrator
of Howard
University.
Yeah, because they were saying my grades are, you know, he called. He said, Robert, don't you know that most of your money comes from the federal government? And then he hung up. He said, you go on back up there and you see Mr. William Roberts. I got in Howard University.
If you have somebody like Strom Thurmond, though, and he's given these segregation speeches.
You wonder how could he be so kind to me and say all these other bad things. I'd be telling you a lie if I said some things he said didn't hurt me, if that's what you want to hear. He said it, but then again, I said, well, he's done so much. The good outweigh the bad, the way I look at it.
And regardless of what somebody like Strom Thurmond may have said,
my mother always said, words don't hurt nobody.
Wow, a lot of people think words hurt a lot.
Well, in some cases, but my mother, I'm telling you what my mother said, and I believe her.
So you stood there and you basically said, I'm not going to worry about what Strom Thurmond says in a speech somewhere. I'm going to relate to him as a person, and he related to you as a person.
That's right. Fulbright voted against the Civil Rights Bill.
Senator Fulbright, yeah.
Nobody never asked me about Fulbright. Me, you know, I like Fulbright just like I like Thurmond. We were friends.
Fulbright ended up, as I understand it, dealing, ironically enough, with Martin Luther King. Because while they disagreed on segregation, they both opposed the war in Vietnam.
That's right. And we went to the, you know, the Reynolds, the backup group people?
Oh, R.J. Reynolds.
R.J. Reynolds, the backup people. You know, Fulbright and the Reynolds were very good friends. Went there one night, and I met Martin Luther King there. I was out there waiting for Fulbright, and he called, told me to come in. He said, Reverend King, I would like for you to meet Bertie, my staff, my driver, my everything. He's a good man. And I was really shocked, you know, that he took the time to call me in to introduce me to it. But that was a good deal.
Some people who haven't spent time in the Capitol may find it amazing to think that you're up here, that you're working in this huge committee room, that you're working around 21 senators who are Democrats or Republicans, some of whom are running for president, and you're working hard to treat them all the same and be non-political. Some people may find that to be an impossible
task. Yeah, but it's
test.
Not hard working to trying to treat them nice. Number one, my mother told me to be patient and do what you're supposed to do, be truthworthy, and be dependable. And that takes care of a lot of things. And I'll find out if it takes care of a lot of things with me.
Bertie H. Bowman told his story in the hearing room of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And then he stood and held out his hand. It was time to take care of another Senate hearing that afternoon. Bowman's memoir is called Step by Step. It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Renee Montaigne.